The following was recorded on February 12, 2008, and is the 17th class in the Then and Now series. Due to technical difficulties, this recording starts a few minutes into the session as participants discuss their experiences with the previous week's guided meditation on kindness.
At first, I thought about the things my parents did that were loving to me, and then later, then I started to remember what recent events people do to be nice. I just take it for granted. I realize that now.
Mm-hmm. What do you experience in your body when somebody, somebody is kind to you?
Sort of an opening and sort of a relaxation.
Mm-hmm. What do you experience emotionally?
A joy.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of a happiness.
Okay. And what I understood you to say is that this reflecting on this made you more aware of kindness you receive on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
Okay. Raquel.
I didn't actually experience anything like that.
there isn't one right experience
right,
here.
No. The thing I noticed the most was the difference in how I experienced other people's kindness over the phone versus in person. Over the phone, there's enough distance that I feel like I can actually feel it and take it in and hear it. Whereas in person, it's kind of, I don't know if it's I don't have the capacity to be with my uncomfortable feelings, but I kind of just hardly feel it.
Oh, this is very interesting. So I'm going to ask you to go a step further here.
Okay.
What is the difference in your physical experience between the phone and in person?
In person, with the experience I'm thinking of someone's kindness, I felt embarrassed and like...
Your physical.
Physical.
Your body.
My body felt like curling over.
Okay. Curling up into a ball?
Curling up. It felt tense, awkward.
Okay. And over the phone?
And over the phone, I felt like, I almost want to say I felt like somebody, but I felt good. I felt my body again. Upright and... less distinguishable kind of body. I think I just was remembering more of the emotional stuff, but physically upright, kind of
something straightened
upright,
up.
Upright, straight posture, yeah.
Okay. So very different from the in-person experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Emotionally, what do you experience in person?
I just felt like tied up in knots. I felt embarrassed.
Self-conscious.
Like, was I worth the kindness? It's so kind, you know, kind of those.
Then the stories start up.
Yeah, I guess that's the story.
So. Okay. And over the phone, what did you experience emotionally?
I felt real joy. I felt so, like, happy and content. And, I was just really, I felt like I deserved it. Like it was an appropriate act of kindness, and I felt like I could take it in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I think it'd be good for you to keep observing that contrast.
Yeah, it happened to be over the same issue, mm-hmm. and so it was like really easy to see the different way
yes.
I responded.
Okay. Kara.
How did I feel physically?
Yes, when you contemplated receiving kindness.
When I contemplated it or when I received it?
Well.
I think when I contemplate it, it's too intangible, and I have to like sort of make up a story or go to something. But when I did receive it, mm-hmm. I felt free, and I felt light, and I felt cared for.
Okay. Alex?
I wasn't here last week.
All right. Randy?
I received two kindnesses that I was attentive to last week, and one was via email, and the other was by phone, and one was small and one was large. And the thing that surprised me most is that there was no difference in my response. So either the vehicle or the size of the kindness mm-hmm. didn't matter. And the feeling was a tightness in my belly, almost cringing, and a tightening in my throat, very notable lump in my throat. Initially, it changed after a moment or two, and the feeling was guilt and shame, mm-hmm. unworthiness. And it was no different for the small favor as for the large favor. Mm-hmm. That was kind of what was striking about that.
Okay.
And then it shifted into feeling very open and wanting to cry. It's really nice.
Okay. Leslie, did you have a chance for these? Okay. Diane?
Well, I tried this actually with two different situations that happened in my past, and they both started out the same. It was in the body, it was like this stomach thing, a very like anxiety. And then in the one instance, I felt, then it went to the heart like it was almost like a wall, like there was a shutting down. And when I finally realized, you know, it took me a while to accept the kindness from this person. When I finally realized what was going on, then it was overwhelming, just like a dam breaking. And the other incident was with someone that...
Dam breaking into what?
Into just being overwhelmed that this person who was a total stranger was so kind to me.
You've used the word overwhelm twice. Open that up a little bit. What's the physical experience of overwhelm? And is it overwhelm or is there some other quality?
No, it is. It's like a flush.
A flush?
Yeah.
Okay. Hot?
Hot.
Right.
Yeah.
Sticky?
Or open? An uncomfortable hot.
An uncomfortable hot. Okay, when somebody is kind to you.
Yes.
Okay, emotions connected with this?
Yeah, I wanted, I just wanted it to stop.
Emotions.
Fear.
Pardon?
Fear.
Fear, okay. Fear of?
Fear of the consequences of the kindness, as if there was something attached to it.
Ah, okay. So that's some of the story.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other shoe was going to drop. Fear that it would be given and then taken away.
Taken away, okay. All right. Shame?
Not in this instance that I was working with. No, I didn't experience
embarrassment.
Embarrassment, yeah.
Okay. Vulnerability?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Molly.
I thought of something in my recent past, and I broke it into the receiving kindness and then letting the kindness in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was working with just receiving the kindness, there was a real a negative emotional reaction to that, like a real gripping.
There's a gripping in your body?
In my body.
Yeah.
And emotionally, like, overwhelming sadness, like Diana was talking about, just...
overwhelming sadness.
Sadness, yeah.
Okay.
Great sadness. But then it felt like there was another layer when I let it in, which was more of relaxing in my body and kind of an ease emotionally or joy, something like that. But then very quickly after that, it turned into... how do I keep this? How can I get more of it? How do I hold on to it?
Sounds like the hungry ghost problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Linnea.
I didn't have a chance.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you had. You were indisposed. Okay. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Good number of you very uncomfortable with being on the receiving end of kindness. All kinds of feelings of discomfort, fear, embarrassment, shame, you name it. This reminds me of a story that I heard many, many years ago, back in the 70s. It was told to me by a kind of brilliant, somewhat insane psychologist in Canada. It's called The Warm Fuzzies and the Cold Pricklies. Have I told you this one, Linnea? Okay. Once upon a time, there was a valley. And in this valley, there dwelt a number of people. And they all went around their affairs, you know, buying from each other and growing crops and raising children and just the normal things that one would do in a rural valley. But the unusual thing about this valley is that, or the people in this valley, is that everybody always carried a satchel. And whenever they met, they would reach into their satchel and they'd take out a warm fuzzy and give it to the other person. And the other person would give them a warm fuzzy. Now, warm fuzzies didn't do very much. They just made you feel warm and fuzzy. Nobody knew where the warm fuzzies came from, but nobody worried about it very much because whenever they reached in the satchel, there was always a warm fuzzy there, and so they just went about quite happily. One day, a wicked witch moved into the valley and saw what was going on and thought this was not good at all. So she invented cold pricklies, and she gave everybody another satchel and said, these are cold pricklies, and you should take care of the warm fuzzies and just be very careful because they may run out, but you always have lots of cold pricklies. Now, cold pricklies, when you received a cold prickly from somebody, you didn't feel very good. You felt cold and prickly. And then you began to think about the warm fuzzy. So more and more people would give each other cold pricklies because they weren't sure about the warm fuzzies. And the strange thing is the number of warm fuzzies seemed to get less and less, or at least people were sharing them much less. And you really didn't like receiving a warm fuzzy from somebody when you gave them a cold prickly. That made you feel really uncomfortable. So after a while, people were just giving each other cold pricklies. And the valley wasn't nearly as happy a place as it used to be. Except there was one woman who just ignored everybody, the witch. And she just went around giving warm fuzzies to everybody. And she never seemed to run out of warm fuzzies. And everybody felt really uncomfortable when they met her because they knew they were going to get a warm fuzzy from her and they were going to give her a cold prickly. Eventually, the wicked witch heard about this woman, and she pointed to the woman and said, she's a witch. And so they burned her. Nice. Well, it kind of fits with everybody's, not everybody's experience here, no? What do you like about the story, Raquel?
A bad ending.
Give Raquel a microphone, would you, Chuck?
I don't have anything else.
Do you recognize anything in the story?
Yeah.
What, if I may ask?
Well, when, I don't know if it's the same thing, but while you're still, well, for me, since I'm struggling to take in and feel people's kindness, which seems like a very ordinary thing to be able to do, you feel sort of damned.
Damned? That's a little strong.
Well, I was thinking of the burned, you know, the woman who got burned. You feel burned, I should say. But not by anybody else except yourself, I guess, in the situation.
So this puts you in touch with something in you. But it's interesting, in your case, if there's a certain physical distance, separation, then you can take it in. But if it's person's right there in front of you, changes things.
Yeah, it's like the intensity of the of a person being right there. It just rises to a level that just, I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to turn this around and ask you a couple of questions, if I may.
Oh, great.
Thank you. If you are kind to somebody, how does it feel? What do you experience in your body when you are kind to somebody? And it can be quite, small kindness, like opening a door for somebody, mm-hmm. which is an act of kindness. How does it feel to you?
Yeah, it feels, it's easier for me to do that. I feel... Do you want me to go? Do I have to go through the whole body?
Yes. Okay. I'm so glad you're learning this.
I mean, it feels like, I mean, a lot of the same sensations as over the phone and receiving kindness. You know, I feel kind of upright posture. I actually think I tend to feel my breath.
Mm-hmm.
Feel sometimes I do have to admit though sometimes I do still feel like wait lights kind of slight waves of awkwardness,
but nothing like when you're on the receiving
end. Yeah, no.
Okay. And does it make a difference whether it's there's a physical separation or whether it's in person?
It still makes a difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
So I feel more comfortable with more distance. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? What's it like to give kindness? Randy?
First, I'd like to thank everybody for sharing, because I used to think I was the only person who was uncomfortable receiving kindnesses.
Okay.
I was brought up with tis better to give than receive, and I enjoy giving, and it feels good. Now I'm wondering, because maybe I'm making people uncomfortable. But
that's a really good reason to stop being kind.
But the idea of the cold pricklies doesn't do it either. There's very much a connecting sense in giving, which for me is kind of absent in the receiving, a feeling of being connected with the person.
This is very interesting. When you give, you feel connected with the person. When you receive...
I don't. Until I make a conscious effort to literally do some cognitive restructuring to remind myself that it's giving the other person pleasure to give me something.
So you have to... I
have to actually construct that in order to feel that connection, whereas it comes very naturally when I give.
Interesting. Okay. Molly, Linnea? Diane?
Well, I just have a comment. I'm sort of back on Raquel. I'm always a beat or two behind her.
So she's not completely alone.
No. Well, I think, you know, for her issue was physical distance. And you know, I said I did this with two specific situations, and my issue was trust, like emotional distance. So in the other example that I used, it was very easy for me to receive the kind of a very different feeling in the body and everything. And I think it was just when I thought about it afterwards, it was the trust I had with that individual as opposed to the other situation I was dealing with a perfect stranger.
So if you know the person and you trust them, then it's easier to receive.
Correct.
And if it's from a perfect stranger?
Well, it's a crapshoot. I mean, really, you know, when the stories go, you know, there's all this stuff. Is it punitive? Is it conditional? Is the other shoe going to drop? Is it going to be taken away? And all that stuff.
Yeah. Is it manipulative? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Molly, Linnea, on giving kindness.
I was just going to say that feeling of my ghost realm where I just want more of it. I don't feel that at all when I give kindness. It's just really great to get. I mean, it feels really good. But I don't feel any kind of, like, connection to them feeling like they need more from me. I don't think that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that means there's some kind of, like, maybe, like Diane was saying, a connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Linnea.
There's something about giving kindness that feels like doing something and that I'm moving away from when I'm actually giving kindness.
Can you try that one again?
Yes. I didn't do this exact exercise, but oddly enough, I had played with something along these lines, but it was explicitly receiving love or giving love, and it was in a different context. And I started to, my experience was that I feel either like I'm moving forward or I have to drop back and relax to actually experience either one.
Okay.
And that otherwise, if I'm giving kindness, there's this, I'm like doing something. But really, when I feel like I've actually given kindness, with hindsight, it's when I'm not trying to do anything.
Ah, okay. All right. Chuck?
I think on both the giving and receiving, I assumed that it wasn't manipulative. That you could trust the person, that they were just, or I could be just myself and give them something and not expect them to give me something, and vice versa, when they were giving me something, that they didn't really expect something back out of me.
Okay.
So that's the way I felt about it.
So you didn't have a lot of stories going.
Right.
Okay. All right. Kara, unless neither of you want to add anything. Kara?
I feel like I should say that I don't like to get kindness.
What?
Because I was the only one that said that I like it. Don't. Don't be nice to me. I don't deserve it. No. I think that that I definitely get more out of giving it than I do getting it, but as a nanny, I don't really get much of a choice in terms of whether or not I want to be kind, because my job is to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I think that's been better because it's helped me to develop a brighter attitude towards adversity or expectations.
So even when I feel physically disinclined to be kind,
I just
move into that place of knowing that that's what's expected of me, and then I don't struggle so much.
Okay. What about receiving kindness?
I'm in a really good place for it right now. No, I mean, I'm surrounded at the moment by people who are very able and capable and willing to be kind, mm-hmm. with very few expectations. And that's not been the case my entire life or in anyone else's. But right now, I feel very comfortable with it. But I don't really expect it from people.
Well, this isn't about expecting it. I mean, what's come out of this discussion is that many of you experience very palpable differences between receiving kindness and giving kindness. And for the most part, you're more you seem to be more comfortable giving kindness than receiving it. Now I'm going to just throw this out for consideration. I'm just going to make a question of it. Something that would be good for you to, I think, all of you to look at is, what in me is uncomfortable receiving kindness? And you just said, Carol, you know, don't be kind to me. I don't deserve it. And that was similar to things that other people were expressing. Now you notice that there's a story connected with receiving kindness. Kara?
I had an interesting dialogue with you like 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Where you said that, and I totally thought of it with the deserving thing, that I told you that I had spent years anticipating something that I wasn't going to get, and I was ready, like just kind of like building up all my engines for the fight, you know, because I wasn't going to get this thing. And then like in the turn of a switch, or not even that much effort, I got exactly what I had anticipated not getting. And I was so, I had convinced myself that the person or people who were supposed to give me this thing had so much malice for me. I couldn't even wrap my head around the fact that I got what I wanted. And then I felt this tremendous, almost disappointment, because
you hadn't had to fight.
It didn't reinforce my my suspicions. In fact, it
blew them out of the water.
Totally. And you know, I said that to you, and you said, "Yes, yes, okay." And you know, and it was like, and it really made me think about just what you just said.
Okay, so the discomfort with receiving kindness is, in my opinion, something that is conditioned into us. I don't think it is natural. And the reason I wanted you to explore this is that the meditation, the cultivation of loving kindness is based on an appreciation of what it is to receive kindness, which is why I think a lot of people have a real problem with this practice. If we're only comfortable giving kindness, it's a way, it can be, I won't say it always is, a way of protecting a certain sense of self, a certain idea of ourselves. We can give. But it doesn't really actually move us into an experience of no separation. The meditations in the Tibetan tradition on cultivating loving kindness are based on reflecting on the kindness that we have received from our mothers. Now, in traditional societies, that was usually pretty straightforward. Mothers, you know, took care of themselves during pregnancy, had the child and nursed the child and took care of it and so forth, and brought the child up and provided a nurturing environment. In the nuclear family or in even single parent homes, the demands placed on the mother can be quite great, and particularly in this country, there's a whole generations in which there have been weaknesses, shall we say, in parenting, so that there's a lot of disconnection or lack of connection that takes place. And so a lot of people in this culture don't feel nurtured by their mothers one way or another, and are not open to receiving kindness. It makes them feel vulnerable or uncomfortable or all of this stuff coming up. So these meditations have been quite problematic for many people, and I think that's largely due to their personal family experience and the conditioning that's come out of it. One of the consequences of that was that when I was writing Wake Up to Your Life, I practiced these meditations in retreat and appreciated the power of them, but was well aware of these difficulties, and so I went through them very, very carefully. And found that the meditation on receiving kindness from the mother actually breaks down into three distinct reflections. And those are, one is recognizing kindness, the second is receiving kindness, and the third is appreciating kindness. Now, that might be better worded, recognizing kindness, acknowledging kindness, and accepting kindness. Now, the first of those, there are a few people in this culture that have some entitlement issues. And so it's very difficult for them to recognize kindness. They just feel that when people are kind to them, that's just what they're due. And that's what the first section of these meditations I think are about. We ordinarily don't think of the mother carrying us during the pregnancy as an act of kindness, but it is. She goes through various discomforts and forms of pains and so forth during the pregnancy, and in most cases willingly accepts them because she's already thinking of the welfare of the child and creating a space for a child in her life. And then there's the actual pain of birth and so forth. And then nursing and providing everything that the child needs and being and just being there for the child completely. Now, we, as I say, many people don't think of that as kindness, but that's actually what is happening. So the first step is recognizing kindness. And I think one of the things that is very fruitful here is actually to go through one's day and just checking through all of the times when people are kind to you in the course of a normal day. There's a point here. It slipped my mind. I hope it'll come back. That was it. Courtesy is the social expression of loving kindness. So good manners are a formal expression of loving kindness, and it is quite astonishing how in certain sections of society good manners have completely disappeared. Just treating people with respect and politeness is not a value and doesn't happen, and if you do, you're regarded with suspicion. All of these to me indicate a absence in some sense of an ethic of loving kindness in the culture. So that's the first step, is recognizing kindness. And the second is acknowledging it, which involves opening. Now, almost necessarily, when we acknowledge kindness, well, let's get your views on this. When you acknowledge that somebody is kind, was kind to you, or has been kind to you, what do you experience in your body? You can just think about that right now. What happens in your body when you say, oh yeah, this person was kind to me, and that was a nice thing they did? What happens in your body? Randy?
I actually feel in my chest, physically, my heart softening and opening.
Okay. Leslie?
I say the same thing. I feel my heart opening and also a relaxation in my jaw.
Okay.
A warm fuzzy.
A warm fuzzy. Okay. Now, how does that feel? Okay. How long can you stay in that? Kara?
Not long.
What happens?
The next thing.
Well, let's suppose there isn't a next thing immediately. Just you'd think, okay, this person was really nice to me. They're very kind. And so there's that softening, that relaxing, that opening in the heart, etc.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you stay there? Raquel?
It depends how far they are from me.
They're right in front of you. 1-2 milliseconds.
Well, I have a question. So are you saying, how far into this are you when you've acknowledged? Have you succeeded in staying with it and then you're sort of resting in that acknowledgement? Or is that...
Let's just take a very small example, okay? We end class tonight, and you come to the door, and Chuck opens it for you. What happens? Yeah, right there.
It just clenches a little. Just a little. mean, you know, not
clenches.
It's like boop.
Yeah. I'm going to suggest that, like, something note. Happens. Pardon?
Kind of like note.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest that something happens before it clenches.
Okay, what are you going to suggest?
Is there a little bit of an opening first?
Yes, first. Okay. That's right.
So it goes.
Exactly.
Don't expect people to open doors for you, Rick. Okay. Randy?
I think it was Diane that said something about strings attached.
Yes.
And the conditioning. And I, mm-hmm. from my own personal experience, and I've done a lot of work in therapy on this, Jewish mothers are good at guilt.
Yeah, it's not like Catholic mothers.
What, you know, what is given, there's an expectation of return, usually with interest. And to differentiate what Kara said, it's not that I don't like receiving kindness. I'm uncomfortable, but then I like it as soon as I realize that there's no strings attached to it.
But this is what I was talking about earlier when I said that in our culture, for whatever reasons, there's conditioning. But what I want to get at is, and Raquel was very generous in this, is that in the act of in the act of kindness, when we acknowledge that we have received kindness, there is a natural opening. Now, our conditioning is such for some of us that as soon as that opening happens, it triggers a whole bunch of other stuff, all these associations, etc. So it just closes down quite hard in some cases. But the natural, unconditioned response to acknowledging kindness is an opening. Okay, Kara? You're scowling at me.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking, and I'm hoping that I make more sense than I did with my last comment about the thing I got. Because that was weird. But what struck me when you were talking earlier is that old adage that we teach kids, especially at Christmas, 'tis better to give than receive. And I think that that pervades a lot of our societal interactions, that you get to have big face if you can be kind. But if you are constantly on the receiving end of kindness or charity, then you must be weak or not pulling your weight. And that's what causes some of the closing, or like Diane said about, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop, like the pulley of expectations to come up.
Sure. I think there are a lot of sources of conditioning, but one has to remember that the aim of this practice is to be able to be present in the world without conditioning. That's what we're actually aiming at. And this whole section, you may recall from our discussion last week, is a way of not withdrawing from the world and just being content in our own happiness, but a way of actively engaging the welfare and being helpful to others. But it needs to come as a natural response to things, not as a contrived or conditioned response. And thing that I should have included earlier this evening, but this is a very good time to bring it up. In the discussion of loving kindness and also of compassion, Gampopa says there are three frames of reference for loving-kindness. There's loving-kindness when the frame of reference is sentient beings, loving-kindness when the frame of reference and in Bolson, there it's termed reality or phenomena. I want to change that translation to experience. And then there's loving kindness and compassion also, which is non-referential. Now, Gampopo only discusses the first and goes through this process that I've been picking apart a bit, where you think of one's mother, and from my point of view, go through the three steps of recognizing kindness received, acknowledging that it was actually kindness, and the third one, which we haven't discussed yet, but I will now, is appreciating what that kindness does for us. So that because we were nurtured by our mother, we actually were able to live. We survived. And I want to come back to that appreciation for a minute, in a minute, but first I want to complete the thought on the three frames. The second frame is the frame of reference is not just consideration of others through this reflective process, but from the way I understand it is it's experiential. That is, when we have the experience of loving kindness ourselves, and we know what that does for us, then it's very easy to feel loving kindness for others. And then the third frame of reference is no reference. That is, it's loving kindness as the natural expression of awake mind. And in this, Buddhism is very clear that, and we actually find something like this in the Heart Sutra, that when the mind is clear, there is no fear, and then naturally expresses itself as loving kindness and compassion. You see others, you want them to be happy, and it isn't coming from any consideration or reflection. It's just a natural expression of that awareness. Now, I want to turn to the third step I just mentioned, appreciating loving kindness. When we receive loving kindness from someone, it can be our mother, could be a camp counselor, could be a teacher, in either elementary or high school or college. It could be a relative, like an uncle or an aunt or somebody like that. And as Diane has pointed out, I think it's quite important. Kindness is not kindness if there's a string attached. So when I say we're on the receiving end of kindness, it means, what I mean is, it is something that is done to us or given to us, and there is no string attached. Okay. What happens in you when that when you're on the receiving end of that? What actually happens in you physically and emotionally and even cognitively? Anybody? Or let's put it in the past, when you receive that kind of attention, because it is a kind of attention, what happened? What difference, if any, did it make in your life? Randy?
When I experience that genuine kindness, that's the kind of melting, opening heart and mm-hmm. that sensation of wanting to cry, but it's not sad tears, it's happy tears.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Molly? Like you really want to talk about this?
Well, I was just going to say that relief kind of
okay
opening joy kind of I can be myself or freedom
I can be myself I can be free
yeah
yeah
like recognition, maybe.
Yeah. So it sounds like that's quite powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Randy again.
P.S. Because you also ask, you know, what do you feel afterwards? And that's that I feel more inclined to be kind to others.
Yes. But I just want to focus on what that experience of kindness does for you. Raquel?
I was going to say, it has made me feel like anything's possible.
Okay. I'm going to put this in more formal language. When you're on the receiving end of kindness, then you feel no separation from the world. I mean, you feel like you have a place in the world. And I think Rujoy tells the probably apocryphal story, but it's just lovely anyway, of this family in a restaurant. And the waitress comes and says, takes the order, and mother says something, and the father says something, and the sister says something, and then the 5 or 6 year old boy says, "I'd like a hot dog." And the mother says, "No, he doesn't want a hot dog, he'll have X, Y, and Z." And the waitress takes everything down, and when she finishes noting everything, she turns to the boy and says, "Would you like that with mustard or relish?" And the boy goes, and says something, and she goes away. And he looks at everybody and says, "She thinks I'm a person." The experience of loving kindness is when we receive kindness, is no longer any separation from the world. We are in the world. And there are a lot of other things which Gampova goes into, you know, we're shown how to function in the world, etc. But it really comes down to not feeling any separation. This is very powerful. Now, when you open to these three steps, you recognize that someone was kind to you, you can acknowledge that it was an act of kindness, and which may have put them at some inconvenience themselves, so it was something freely given that they didn't need to do, and it produces this kind of experience in you, possibly a change or a shift in the way that you understand your relationship with the world. What is the natural inclination at that point? Or what do you feel? I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. What do you feel for that person? Leslie?
Love.
Love, exactly. That's what you feel. And so this is why this whole meditation on loving kindness is based on being able to experience receiving kindness, because when we let that experience in, it cuts through all of our conditioning and gives rise to the natural experience, or expression of love, which you can in this context define as a radiant warmth, and it's just there. It's not something that's contrived. It's not something that is manufactured or artificial. It comes directly out of letting the experience of receiving kindness in. And really, and the natural response is loving kindness. And that's what we feel for others. That radiance warmth. We just want that person to be happy. We don't care about, you know, the details or anything like that. It's just a very, very natural thing. This is the quality of loving kindness that Gampopa is encouraging us to cultivate, because when that feeling arises, the idea that we're just going to be happy by ourselves and not worry about anybody else, just it can't take hold. I mean, it doesn't work, because that is a form of separation from the world. With that expression, that love coming out of us quite naturally, there's a much deeper sense of no separation, in which we feel an intimate connection with that person. Now, the next thing that happens in the chapter, as you may recall, is that you extend this to all sentient beings. And the way it is extended to all sentient beings is by considering that every being in the course of time without beginning in samsara has been our mother innumerable times. And so we should naturally feel this for all beings. How does this work for you? See, a bunch of people here are shaking their heads. Again, this is a mythic expression. It's based on a worldview. But we can interpret or work with it in a somewhat different way. And I think what people have described about their discomfort with receiving kindness allows us to explore this quite easily. Are there parts of you that can receive kindness relatively easily, and in which that natural love can be elicited quite easily? Okay. Are there parts of you that it is more difficult? Raquel?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that. When you just asked us, you know, think of a camp counselor or whatever, and I thought of a high school teacher who was so kind, and I did have this feeling that of love, you know, from them, and it wasn't this awkward, you know, embarrassed thing. And then in another example, it's totally different. So I guess I was just wondering, could it be just a reaction to the feeling of no separation or not?
Well,
what's
yes,
the reaction to? I mean, it's not a reaction to Chuck or anyone actually there, it seems like. It's like a reaction to a feeling.
Well, I think there are two possibilities here. One is it can be a reaction to a feeling of no separation, which, if we have a very strongly defined sense of self as being separate from the world, suddenly feeling ourselves without any barrier, it can be very disturbing or frightening. And so there can be a withdrawal from that experience. And then I think the other source is what Diane was referring to earlier, is that there are certain associations of receiving kindness when something, when it has been given with strings, and we've had to pay a price for being open. So now we distrust the feeling of being open and responsive that way, and that's why I told the story of the warm fuzzies and the cold pricklies, which is about that exactly. So in terms of cultivating this, one, instead of thinking of all sentient beings have been my mother, mothers at one point or another, one might think of it in terms of can I receive kindness in every area of my psyche, my personality, and we quickly come to appreciate that certain areas of us, for most of us, that are very uncomfortable with receiving kindness. They've been threatened or possibly even traumatized in the past, and they're closed. So working at this meditation is, or this form of meditation, is a way of actually opening up those closed areas in ourselves. And that is, to my mind, the function of fostering loving kindness for all beings without limit, is that it is a different way of coming to open to loving kindness in every aspect of our mind. Do you see how those two things are different ways of saying the same thing? Because what are all sentient beings? All sentient beings is the totality of our experience. So if we can let loving kindness pervade every aspect of experience, then we'll have loving kindness for all beings. Now, this is very doable. In terms of many of the meditations that we do in Buddhism, this one's actually not that hard. I remember one of my students when she was working on this, recalls coming out of a yoga class actually feeling complete loving kindness for all beings. And then another part of her saying, this is nauseatingly sick and sweet. But it's actually quite easy. If one can sit with the discomfort of receiving kindness, and in just the way that I was pointing out to you earlier, and recognize that the basis of that is all conditioning. And when you recognize the basis of it all conditioning, then it becomes possible to let that in, and the natural response is this love, this radiant warmth, which just goes out. Kara, you had a question or a comment.
Per the strings attached, I mean, what if we are working really diligently in this meditation and trying to cultivate that awareness, but at the same time, I guess an example I would use, I misheard you when you said, how do we feel when we receive loving kindness? But I thought that you said, because you had used an example of the strings attached, how do we feel when we experience the strings attached form of loving kindness? And so I sort of went on to a, you know, white hot pokers kind of realm.
Hell realm.
And that's a place that I've discovered I'm actually pretty comfortable from reacting from. But I find that people whom I've experienced that sort of kindness from want to, I don't know, like I feel like I'm still getting it, and part of me just can't believe that they're genuine this time. And so as much as I want to be compassionate towards them, I feel like there's still a pretty big barrier.
Yes.
And okay. But isn't it valid that there's a barrier? I mean, how do you, isn't it reasonable? I mean.
Well, there are these people being kind, okay?
But they want something, maybe.
They want something.
They have historically.
Maybe. Yes, let me differentiate here. In order to develop loving kindness in this way, one needs to have experienced receiving kindness with no strings attached. And it's that core experience, or that experience you take as the core. Now, afterwards, once you've connected with that feeling, then you can think of, well, this person, well, they're being kind to me, but really they really want something from me. Maybe you can see that. Maybe it's made quite explicit. Does that prevent you now that you know what loving kindness is, feeling loving kindness from them, for them, you don't want to, I know, but you get my point.
No, I think I want to, but the human response is, well, if I can feel that for them, then why can't I relate to them? Why can't I have, you know?
Well, let's be very clear here. We can feel loving kindness for others. It doesn't mean that we have to trust them with everything and be open. You know, we can be quite realistic. There's an old Tibetan expression saying, think of all beings with compassion, but keep your hand on your wallet. No. The point here is when we feel that love and kindness, there's a radiant warmth we feel that just goes out. There's an opening to the world just as it is, and a reduction in the sense of separation. Probably we are going to see things more clearly as a result of that. And so our actions are going to be more appropriate for that. And if we see that someone is trying to manipulate us, we'll see that. But that doesn't, we won't regard that person as an enemy. We'll just see that as that's what's happening there. And so we don't close to that person, but we will still interact with them judiciously. Okay. Alex, did you have a...
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, as you were talking about this, that it's difficult for to sort of synchronize the giving and receiving of kindness, that a lot of times it can happen, I think, that someone would intend to really be kind, but it's maybe not exactly what somebody wanted, or it's also difficult to try to do something kind and then really understand what somebody wants. And so it seems like as you're talking about this, it's kind of in a kind of a specifically at one person, you know, the kindness of one's mother, but kindness from, you know, receiving kindness from more than one person, or receiving a kindness again and again and again, and receiving what you wanted. Those things, I think, really have, it's a way to think about it rather than really specifically, you know, thinking of one specific example is kind of, you might even feel tension. Like one person is very kind, another person not kind, and mm-hmm. you feel a lot of stress. So that if it's more less focused, maybe to me, I would think that has the potential to really, has the potential to change how I feel or respond to situations.
Well, you bring up a very good point here, Alex. There are several different methods for cultivating loving kindness. Gampopa presents this one. And the one that I outline in Wake Up to Your Life is a little different, because it brings attention to the reaction of closing down, and you use the experience of receiving kindness from anybody as a way of penetrating that reaction of closing down. Theravadan tradition, you start by being kind to yourself. You know, may I be safe, happy, and free from harm. And when you've cultivated that and can feel that for yourself, then you start expressing that to other people. In some of his talks, the Dalai Lama said none of these methods worked for him. And he was given another method by one of his instructors. which consisted of weighing the what was good for a group of people worth versus what was good for an individual. That this is the method that worked for him. And so we need to find a method that works for us, and you seem to have found a way of working with this that works for you. And so I would encourage you is to explore these different methods and find one which actually works for you. Now, Linnea, could you...
I feel like I might have asked you this question like in some other class, but I'm still confused. Whenever we start talking about loving kindness or the practices around it, I start not knowing where loving kindness meditations end and where compassion. I don't understand the difference, because the internal response I'm having is that working with compassion somehow, at least in my experience, however I feel like I'm approaching it, asks me to experience the contradictions of, I think you, I already asked the question, so I'll stop there.
I love it. I just love the confidence you have in me. You understand the question,
well,
answer.
Well, I think you nodded and then I kept on going. So.
Okay. Well, I was just going to go into compassion. But since you've asked what I've understood you to ask, is what's the difference between loving kindness and compassion?
Yes, and this is going to sound horrible, but this is what's going on in my head, is that loving kindness feels like compassion light.
One could construe it that way, but I think here's one way to get at the difference. Think of all of the people in your world right now. We're not being particularly idealistic. You know, so please don't aspire to perfection in this right now. Think of all or people in the world that you want to be, you'd like them to be happy. And you can genuinely feel, yeah, well, yeah, so and so, I'd like them to be happy. I'd like this person to be happy. Okay. Now, of those people, if they were actually suffering, which of those would you step in to help? Now, is it exactly the same group, or is it a smaller subgroup? Linnea? Since you asked this question.
Stepping in to help asks more.
It does.
Then I feel like in the recognizing kindness in others, recognizing kindness from that second group where I'd have a harder time stepping in, at least for me, feels like goes into a space of compassion to even see kindness there.
So it's a smaller group.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the difference. And I don't really, I can kind of appreciate Linnea's characterization of loving kindness as compassion light. It's actually a different quality. Loving kindness is an ecstatic practice or state. It's an opening. It's, as I said, it's kind of a radiant warmth. Compassion has a much stronger quality of actual presence. And it's the willingness to be present with another person's pain. And not have to get rid of it in order for you to be comfortable. So the meditations on compassion bite a little, our heavier meditations. And you can see this in, if we're looking at Kenchok Jeltsin's, in the meditations of loving kindness, you're focusing on the receiving of kindness, which naturally, when you really take in receiving kindness with no strings attached and appreciate what it does for your life, as I said earlier, then there's this natural response of radiant warmth, wanting the other person to be happy, with no strings attached in your direction either. But now you take this person and you match him in the hell realms. And suppose my mother was in a place where someone beat her, cut her to pieces, cooked her, burned her in a fire, or suppose she was freezing cold and her body was blistering. You can recognize these are the descriptions of the hot and cold hells. So, you know, take a person that has been kind to you so that you are feeling that warmth for them. Now imagine them suffering in extreme. What happens in you? And I think if you observe that almost immediately there's a contraction and you just want to shrink away from that scene. If you go on to Amazon.com, you'll read and look up Wake Up to Your Life. One of the reviews is extremely negative on the book. You read it? Yeah. Because I presume it's a he, quotes a passage from the compassion meditations and excoriates me for, you know, what kind of Buddhist would ever writes something so horrendous as this. Well, he is experiencing the contraction very, very vividly. Now, it didn't have anything to do with it. And now, with loving kindness, what gets in the way of loving kindness is shutting down, which you were describing, Raquel, how you shut down. What gets in the way of compassion is withdrawing and wanting to move away from that. And to open to this person who's been kind to you and now is suffering, and actually to be there, means we have to work through helplessness, we have to work through our own personal revulsion. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we have to work through until we can just be there and not want or be trying to control the situation. And that opens the possibility of being truly responsive to the situation, not just taking care of it the way we would like to take care of it so we don't have to be uncomfortable. Is this making sense to you, Lynette? Okay, is this differentiating it sufficiently? Okay. So this is a whole another meditation or other meditation in which you're using this extremely vivid imagery. And you can use any of the imagery of the six realms, but here they're presented very succinctly. If my mother was in a place where she suffered from thirst or hunger, tortured by sickness, fever, fear, and a feeling of helplessness. So that's the hungry ghost realm, or the animal realm. And then have this wonderful one. Also, my mother was near a precipice over which she could fall for 1,000 miles, was unaware of this danger, and no one showed it to her, and once she fell into the abyss, she would experience great suffering and be unable to climb out again. Well, this is a metaphorical description of the human and God's realms, where you're everything's kind of okay, but you don't know how to act, so you accumulate bad karma, and this throws you into the pits of conditioned reactivity and so forth. So in Wake Up to Your Life, I suggest you just actually use the imagery of all of the six realms. Again and again, you're going to be hitting this contraction in yourself. But when you can just, when you can actually experience that contraction, it releases. And now you find yourself present with this very painful image or scene. And the actual experience of compassion is one of intense yet exquisite pain, because your heart is open and you are you're present with the suffering of the other. And even though that is very painful, the exquisite part is that you know you're touching what is true. And as I've said earlier, I think in this series of classes, when we touch what is true, body and mind relax. Molly?
You said the open heart quality.
Mm-hmm.
Is it slightly different? Because before you were explaining the open heart quality for loving kindness as being
radiant. Yeah. Yes. So this is much more quality of just being present.
Still saying open heart.
Because you have the loving kindness there, so that open heart doesn't go away. But even though that your heart can be open, you can really want to just make the situation different so that they aren't suffering. But with compassion, you can be there and accept exactly what is without trying to separate from it yourself. And so you know what it's like when you see someone you care about very much in pain. The tendency is to withdraw. You may not withdraw physically, but internally you want to withdraw. And to actually be with them and accept their pain is very difficult. And not have to do something about it. But only when you can be present with them in their pain would you have any chance of seeing clearly what, if anything, should be done. You follow?
Yeah.
And one of the most vivid examples I had of this was years and years ago when a woman, and I write about this in Wake Up to Your Life, was working on these meditations in a group I had, and she asked about her son who wasn't doing very well. He was addicted to crystal meth, and in order to support his habit, had started to deal. And she knew, because he wasn't the brightest kid on the block, that he would eventually be arrested for dealing, which carries a much heavier sentence, of course, than being arrested for possession. And she tried various interventions to get him into treatment, but nothing had worked. So, she'd been advised to arrange to have her son arrested for possession so that he would get the treatment that he needed in the system, rather than risk having him arrested for dealing, which would mandatory sentences would be like 10, 15 years in jail, much worse. Well, this is a hell of a situation for a mother to be in. And she talked with me and one other person who's who's expert in this area after class one evening. And at a certain point in our conversation, she said, "I'm just looking for a good solution." And I looked at her and I said, "In this situation, there is no good solution. This is a terrible situation. There isn't a good solution in this one." And when I said that, something in her shifted. And she relaxed, as I said, because now she saw, she was looking for a way out of it, so nobody was ever going to feel, nobody was going to feel any pain. That was the idea of a good solution. And when she took in that there wasn't a good solution, that there was going to be pain whatever happened, then she could be present in the situation. And she said, just a few minutes later, I know what I need to do. I never knew what she did. That she found that clarity within herself from letting go of the of trying to avoid the pain and just being with it.
So her, just real quick, her wanting to evade the pain was her retracting and...
That was the contracting, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yep. Randy.
Two bits I'm getting for a check to see if I'm getting it.
Okay.
One, that in the distinction between loving kindness and compassion, I'm seeing loving kindness as an emotion and compassion as a behavior or a willingness to take action, even if the action is, as you said, being present, which is an action of not running away. So with loving kindness, there's no desire to take a specific action. It's an emotional.
I can understand how you came to that interpretation, but I would say that that's probably not the best way of looking at it. They're both emotions. I like to refer to them as higher level emotions because they aren't organized around a sense of self as the reactive emotions are, like anger and pride and desire and so forth. They are organized around non-separation, both of them. And they have a different, they have different qualities. As I said, one is radiant warmth and the other is expression of presence. You're quite right in that compassion will feel like more of a demand and a demand for action, which is what awakening mind, which is what we're going to be going into next, is all about, is feeling that others are suffering, and so feeling that as a call to become so awake that one knows how to help them.
Okay, so then that sort of leads into the second question, which is that loving kindness seems to be when everybody's in a warm, fuzzy place, and compassion seems to be when at least one party is in a cold, prickly place.
I'm not quite sure how you get there, Randy.
Well, you don't feel compassion for somebody where everything's going great. You feel compassion when somebody's suffering.
Yes, but you can also feel loving kindness when people are suffering. The traditional definitions are: loving kindness is the wish that others be happy. Compassion is the wish that others not suffer.
So you don't feel compassion for somebody who is happy.
What are you trying to get at here?
No.
Yes, but...
Because my own feelings of loving kindness towards people is a positive feeling. Whereas when I feel compassion, it's because I feel sorry for somebody or something.
Compassion and feeling sorry are not the same.
And
feeling sorry for someone is based on the
bad
feeling of,
right. And that's that was not good, but it was more along that line.
In compassion, there's no feeling of superiority or anything like that.
Sorry, meaning regret that whatever's happening is happening. Not.
I'm not even sure that's. There's a sadness, I'm not sure that there's necessarily regret. In fact, I wouldn't say that there's regret, because that's wanting things to be other than they are.
Yeah, to say, gee, I wish this wasn't happening to you. Isn't that an expression of compassion?
It can be, but it may not be. It can be said in a lot of different ways. It seems to me you're trying to understand this intellectually.
So what else is new?
Okay. Rather than try to understand it intellectually, because I think you'll find it more fruitful to recall instances where you felt loving kindness and just take that in, and recall instances when you felt compassion and take that in. Because I generally find that working from an experiential basis is far more reliable than trying to understand it, because understanding doesn't produce the feeling itself.
That's actually exactly where I got to the point of thinking that loving kindness is something one shares when everybody's in the warm, fuzzy place, and compassion when somebody's hurting. Because that's been my experience.
Yeah. I would say that loving kindness is more about opening, and compassion is more about caring for. And you can care for people who are happy just as you can care for people who are in pain. So that it's not mutually exclusive, okay?
Okay, I wasn't defining that as compassion, I guess. I wasn't labeling it that way.
Uchiyama in How to Cook Your Life talks about these very nicely. Loving kindness is the magnanimous mind, which just is open to everything, and compassion is the parental mind, which doesn't seek to control but cares for.
Okay. And that's a word that helps me.
Good. Okay, Leslie, did you have something, and then we need to close.
I was just, when you said that compassion doesn't seek to change, to have things be different than they are, it's being with what is.
Order to take care of yourself.
Okay. Because if you want them not to suffer, that is a wanting it to be different, right?
Yes, but you don't want them. Many people don't want other people to suffer because it makes them makes them uncomfortable themselves. So they will say, I don't want you to do this because it just makes me so uncomfortable, so I'm not even going to let you do this. And it moves into a real controlling kind of thing. Whereas the compassion that we're talking about isn't based on that self-protection. It's saying, okay, this is the situation. I can be here with you. And in that, really open to what possibilities. And sometimes the possibilities are just to be with the person. There isn't anything else to be done. And so then it becomes compassion of presence. Or the just being present with the other person becomes the act of compassion. You're not doing anything. And for some people, that's the most difficult form. Ironically, for many people, if they're suffering, that's primarily what they want. You know, if there was something to do about their suffering, they would have done it themselves. But to have someone who can actually just be there and not afraid of being there with them is really very, very meaningful. You find this very often when people are dying or very ill. They do not want people around who are trying to control their experience or trying to do it, because they, when they're dying, they're very sensitive to that. And they will the only people they want around are people who can just actually be there and not trying to control the situation, not make them feel better. You follow? Okay, good. Kara, last comment. We have another mic somewhere? Yeah.
was just going to say, to touch on Randy's, that people who are really happy want the same exact thing.
Pardon?
To be allowed to be happy, to be in their happiness.
Yes, that's right.
To have people who are willing to be present and,
yeah,
and none.
That's actually joy.
Right. But, I mean, it takes a compassionate, present person to be able to share in someone's happiness and not interject your own ego into it.
I agree. But that particular ability is called joy. That's right. Okay. Next week, we're going to move on to the subject of refuge. So don't look it up in your books, please. I'm going to give you a very short instruction and meditation for this. You notice in the prayer that we do at the beginning of the class, could you read that, Randy? Or just let me, because you don't have the mic. The three jewels, the reliable and definite refuges, give me energy to trust them. Okay, what I want you to do in your meditation over the next week ask yourself the question, what do I actually trust? As before, I want you to note the physical reactions that arise when you entertain that question, the emotions that arise, and the stories that arise. So, first question is, what do I actually trust, or what do I really trust? What path do I trust? Second question.
What's the second?
What path do I trust? Or path in the very broad sense, what way do I trust? Third is, how do I know I trust? I should keep you busy. Okay. All right, so this concludes this class, and I'll see you next week.
You have just heard a talk by Ken MacLeod, author of Wake Up to Your Life and director of Unfettered Mind, a California nonprofit corporation. This podcast and many others can be found on both iTunes and on the Unfettered Mind website at www.unfetteredmind.org. This podcast is free and has been made available through generous donations from our listeners. We would appreciate any assistance you can offer. Your tax-deductible donations may be made through the Unfettered Mind website, unfetteredmind.org, where you will find translations, articles, information about Buddhism, and other programs given by Ken MacLeod. All rights in this podcast, given by Ken MacLeod, are owned by Unfettered Mind. Unfettered Mind hereby grants you, the listener, the non-exclusive license to listen to and distribute this podcast freely, but only without charge and only if each copy contains all the original contents and these proprietary notices. You may not charge any fee of any kind for making a copy of this podcast available in any form. You may not extract portions of this podcast except for commentary purposes and only if you give proper attribution and this proprietary notice. You may not include this podcast, or any portion thereof, with any other podcasts, talks, information, or data for which any amount is charged. Title, ownership rights, and intellectual property rights in and to this podcast shall remain in Unfettered Mind. This podcast and all elements within it are protected by the copyright laws of the United States and international copyright treaties.